Hey everybody, this is Chris Kelso with Unmanned. Welcome to the show today. I have special guest Ed Gonzalez from High Point Aerial Solutions. And Ed and I are going to be talking about the commercial piloting, small UAS, so a lot of the quadcopters and small UAVs that you see in the news recently. And Ed is an award-winning videographer. He's done shoots for movies out there in Hollywood, and he's really the main drone guy here in Central New York. So he's won a couple awards at the New York State Fair for best drone photography, and I'll let him talk to you a little bit more about that. So, Ed, welcome to the show. How's it going, man?
Very good, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course, man. Thanks for doing this. So you are a small UAS company. So for everyone that's listening that's not familiar with that, that's a lot of the quadcopters and things like that that you see on TV. We just had a plane incident, I think, at an airport in New Jersey that just happened. I'm sure we'll get to that later. So, Ed, why don't you tell us a little bit about, how you got started? Why did you get into this? And just kind of touch on, why you became the drone guy here in Central New York.
Yep. So about 4 years ago, I was just sitting on the couch. I was on the internet and I saw a YouTube video of a drone inside fireworks. And I thought that was so cool. And, me being an engineer, I kind of just thought about how I could use that and make money, make money from it. So, I talked my wife into buying a really expensive drone, but of course I had to give her the return on investment presentation before she allowed me to buy it. And once I did that, then I bought my first drone and I joined a university. It's called, it used to be called Cine Chopper Drone University, but now it's called Drones. Now it's called DPA. I kind of just learned the niche and, the whole perspective of, flying high and, getting photos from up high, that kind of just got me hooked instantly. And I started the business and it's been doing very well since.
It's awesome, dude. I was a huge photography guy when I was younger. I used to do photography for a ski resort and where I grew up. And I don't know, I'm like addicted on Instagram to looking at drone pictures. The people out there doing this, it's incredible. And just the imagery and the stuff that you can get, the stills that I didn't think were possible. I mean, you're doing it right now, so you're living that. But for me, I just gotta watch through the phone. So, I wanted to kind of talk to you about how, the positive impact that drones can have on the community, in the private sector. And like you said, there's just so many cool things that you can do with it now. And that high aerial imagery. So, could you talk to me a little bit more about why you think drones are moving in a good direction, or if you think that there's problems where we're going to have some issues where people are going to look at it in a negative way?
All right. So like 4 or 5 years ago, when the word or the term drone was, like on TV or read, people would generally see that as a negative military image type thing. So definitely in the last 4 years, things have changed. I believe that when people hear the term drone now, that they understand that now it's not a military vehicle, it's used as a tool. And every day I'm learning that it's being used for more and more different applications. And it is like, we're just in the forefront of this drone industry. So it's definitely, it's been gaining a lot of positive impact, especially in the communities for like events and things like that. And now I just feel like it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing. And it's going to definitely have a positive impact more than a negative.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. I think that there's many more positive applications that this can be used for than negative.
Correct.
But as we've seen in the news recently, there was, an airport that got basically held hostage because of somebody with a drone. And as
Oh, wow.
I mean, I don't know if you've seen that yet. I think it was New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey. And there's people like suing the airlines and stuff and all kinds of crazy shit. But
Oh, wow.
I mean, how if someone to you know for so for somebody to do that, they have to be. You're the expert here with the small drones. But I mean, my stuff, it was all satellite. I flew with the big ones. It was all satellite stuff. But you have the little ones. That's got to be line of sight, right? That's you have to be in a close vicinity to do that. I mean, it's.
Yeah, that you are totally right. Like, you have to be line of sight. You have to be able to visually see the drone at all times.
Oh, so you can't. I was thinking in my head, like, man, why can't they find this dude, right? So I was thinking, is this guy like sitting in a stall in a bathroom somewhere, like just flying this thing on with his little like Nintendo Switch size screen in his hands, or how's that gonna? I mean,
No,
how does it work?
he could very well be doing that, but what I meant to say that the FAA rule is line of sight, but you could definitely be sitting in your house looking at your screen. I mean, the drone is connected through many satellites, half Russian, half US. But so if you're inside the house and you want to control the drone outside of your house, you can very well do that. The only thing that you are more limited to is the image transmission, but you can still go pretty far. So
So
I could, yeah.
his feed might have been a little bit bad, but if he was
Yeah.
hiding somewhere.
Right.
That's just crazy to me. Well, I don't think that guy cared about FAA rules either.
Yeah. I am sure that he did not go on the website, the FAA, and registered his drone and read the rules. He probably just went to Best Buy, bought the drone, and popped the batteries in.
You think they're gonna make you think the government's gonna crack down and make people have to register these things like they do weapons, or
Oh,
is that
wow.
already a thing? Is that already a thing?
Yeah, I haven't even thought about like to that extent, but I know that President Trump did sign a 4,000-page document that basically has a lot of new rules in it. And it's
That nobody read.
So we're instructed to just keep doing what we're doing until they roll this out. But yeah, I feel now that being a commercial drone pilot, we have more rules on us than the hobbyists. Like, the hobbyists can just go and or anybody that's not a commercial drone pilot can just pick up a drone and fly it, and and not be as restricted as we are.
Do you think that's because commercial drone pilots can monetize their work and the government just looked at a way for them to make more money?
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head, Chris.
Because a hobbyist doesn't get anything for it. Now, let me ask you this. Actually, that kind of brings me to my next point. Are hobbyists taking business away from commercial guys like you that are following the rules?
That I have some actual personal experience from that. I mean, when I first started, I wanted to start simple and take pictures of houses for real estate. And on the internet, I was just trying to see how much drone pilots typically go for when you are trying to work in the real estate industry. As low as $100, I was just trying to get money and kind of just get my money's back worth for all the equipment that I just bought. And it was just tough. I mean, it got to the point where the real estate agent, after he saw how easy it was, he went out and bought a drone for himself and just took pictures for himself, which you cannot do that. You cannot do that. You know, you cannot do that.
You can't do it now, right? Because of these, because of the Part 107, the FAA stuff.
Right. You cannot do that. You have to have a remote pilot's license. You have to go through the whole shebang and actually work to get your license. If you're doing anything whatsoever to monetize on it, you will get fined.
If you get caught, right?
Right. And then there's people who are being creative and they're flying the drones and they are selling like a pen for $10. You know, like they're selling something else to trying to like get around it, you know, and say, oh no, I'm not selling you these pictures. I'm selling you you know, the stock or this object.
It's just
going crazy.
Like, here's a coffee mug for $200. Oh, and it comes with a free disc of all this imagery I took of your house.
Right. Exactly.
You got the hobbyists out there doing that. So let's say I'm a potential client, right? And I'm online and I'm looking for drone stuff in central New York. Are you saying that, you know, obviously your site's going to come up because you're one of the biggest people here in central New York. But if that's how I found you originally. Do you think, though, that I'm going to also see a bunch of hobbyists, amateurs, or kind of, I don't want to call it fake, but that's kind of what they are. Are they going to pop up online, too? Like, is it going to come through Craigslist? Or, I mean, how are you finding these hobbyists? How would I find one of those hobbyists?
Right. So I have been personally finding them on Facebook, and these are just people who are posting videos and pictures. And then once you know somebody with a drone, and you hear that somebody, you know, would like to take a video of them on a snowmobile, and they're like, he will pay you $100 to take a video. And it's so easy just to go to somebody who is willing to make, you know, $30, you know, $10, $20, $30 for doing something like that, when you're really taking away the business from somebody who went through all of the training and all the hard work to learning how to use the camera. You're just taking it all away from them. But yeah, Facebook is really just where I'm finding these people. You won't find them if you do like a Google search, or at least I haven't found them. But social media is plays a big part. Like I said, once you know somebody that has a drone, then you will more than likely go to them.
You know, I bet you, though, that the quality of product or imagery or video that they're putting out as these amateur people, I bet you it's not the same kind of quality that you're going to get going with a guy like you.
Yep.
If I had to put my money
on it. I totally agree.
And I think that if more people like you start getting certified and licensed and whatnot, I think you're going to find that these hobbyists are going to eventually fade away. Because one, they're either not going to get the business because people are going to start going to people like you that are more well known, or two, they're going to realize that they can actually make some serious money doing this, and they're going to go out and get that license and commercialize themselves.
Yep. No, I totally agree with you.
Now, you talked about how you had to, like, you know, start out real small and kind of try to pay off your equipment. So what drones do you have? Like, what, like, can you tell me about your equipment? Because, like I said, this is really foreign to me. So, you know, explain to me, you know, what goes into this? You know, what's the investment here?
Okay, so when I first started, I looked into what was the best of the best. Who was the leading manufacturer of drones? And it certainly is DJI. And now when you throw the name out DJI, almost everybody knows who are interested in drones, that is the biggest manufacturer of drones. It's a company out of China. And so my first drone that I bought was a Phantom 3 Professional, which is a 4K camera drone. It's a very nice drone. It cost me at the time about $1,300, $1,400. And this drone did everything and anything that I wanted to do. And believe it or not, I still have that as my backup drone. I will not get rid of that drone. That is like, so the Phantom 3 Professional, that was the first drone that that I bought, and I slowly started upgrading. I went through to get a Phantom 4, which is also 4K, just has a better camera sensor. And once I started learning that all the different tools that you could use it for, I was like, I want to go faster, and I want to follow a car going 50 miles an hour. So then I upgraded, or I bought another drone. I got the Inspire 2. And now this drone shoots at 5.2K. I believe it goes up to like 70 miles an hour. You cannot miss a shot, because you can zoom in is, you know, down to 1080p and still have a huge window to like shoot with. So, that is a beast. That's what I use, mainly now. So I have the Inspire 2, the Phantom 3 Professional. I had the Phantom 4, and I have these little micro drones, or they're not really micro, but they're like handheld drones, or probably a little bigger than like an iPhone. That's a Spark. Wow. Yep. That's a DJI Spark. And also the, Mavic 2 Professional. Yep. So it's all DJI.
Yep. Do you think that China just made these drones so they can map out the entire United States and they invade us?
That's too funny. That's too funny. I'm pretty sure I had a dream about that, but
you know they're storing all this somehow.
Oh yeah. So now, now that I actually sell drones, I get them cheaper because I am a dealer, so I get them much cheaper. So I have to stop like looking at these things, because I just keep buying them. I was on their website and I sent them an email saying, how can I be a authorized dealer for DJI? And they wrote back to me. I got an email back from I forgot the person's name. This was a long time ago. And he asked me questions like, do I have any material to show him, like, why do I want to sell drones? And I told him, you know, I own a business. I do work for the community. I teach people safety and this and that. And they actually partnered me with the leading U.S. manufacturer or distributor, rather, called Drone Nerds. And so the last 2 to 3 years, I've been working with Drone Nerds. They have a warehouse in Florida, and basically it's they sell me the drones maybe 20-25% off like the regular price, and whatever difference I sell it between the wholesale and the dealer price, then I just pocket that money.
That's awesome.
Yep. So, but there's really always new drones coming out.
Yeah. So you stick only with DJI, is that correct?
That is correct. That is not to say that there's other manufacturers that are comparable or good. It's just that now the platforms that I have and the software is just easy to use one thing.
So is it kind of like Apple? Is it like DJI has a good ecosystem and it's just easy for you to integrate a new DJI drone with what you have going instead of doing like a different kind?
Right. The camera lenses that I have, they will only work on my Inspire 2. That is like one example. And the lenses are not cheap. So those will not work on another drone. You know, like I can't go buy a Parrot or another drone and just, you know, put that camera on there. That's probably one of the tougher things that you like can't do.
That makes sense that they're keeping it all in house so that you can't switch and swap.
Right. And they're also making it easier. Oh, sorry to cut you off, but
No, you're fine.
No, they're also making it easier to do things like getting authorization at an airport or near an airport if you need to fly you know, just 100 feet to do something. They make it easier for you to find your drone if you lose it. So they're just on top of the game. You know, when one company has an idea, DJI already thought about it.
So if people are listening to this podcast and they're saying, okay, man, Ed's kind of sold me here, I want to get into this too, what would you suggest would be a good starter kit for a new 107 guy?
I would say absolutely the Mavic Pro Professional. Or sorry, the Mavic 2 Professional is a perfect drone for someone to start with. I mean, that drone's going to be a little pricey. I believe it's now like $1,400, but that drone will do anything and everything, and it's small. And you know, that's like the perfect starter drone, the Mavic 2 Professional. There's so much that I could say about it, but if you were to try to grab the drone and move it while it's in the air, it'll fight you to go back to that point that all of the satellites are locking you in. And the biggest complaint I get from people who buy drones, like the little drones at like Walmart or something like that, is that it's hard to control them because they just flop all over the place and you have to like play with the trim and things like that. But it's more of like ready out of the box type thing if you get the Mavic 2 Professional. Now, it doesn't have to be that high. You can get like other drones, but that one is like the perfect starter kit.
Yeah, my 8-year-old son wanted a drone for Christmas. So I went and bought him like one of them small ones, one of those little tiny quadcopters. And that was a mistake because he just flew that thing all around my house and just slammed into the wall with it and everything else. But, you know, in the wintertime, a drone's not the best present. nobody wants to go outside. And
yep.
I got this tiny little quadcopter flying around and blades are shooting off at me and stuff. So, maybe in a couple of years we'll move into the Mavic 2 there that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And you can also build your own too.
Oh, yeah.
They have little DIY kits that you can buy. You can buy the frame, you can buy the camera, you can buy the motors. It's a lot cheaper, but if you're tech savvy and you like doing that kind of stuff, then I also recommend that as well.
Okay. So you did mention something about how you teach safety and stuff. So can you talk to people a little bit more about like privacy laws or safety? Like I think the big scare is people are afraid that someone's going to have a drone just hanging right outside their bedroom window and there's nothing they can do about it except close the curtain, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, what are those privacy laws or kind of ease that fear that people are having?
Right. Well, right now, unfortunately, there is no law that says that you cannot be flying in your neighbor's backyard and stare at your neighbor's daughter or like, you know, there's no law that says that. It's just common sense. You can't do that. But I feel I did not get into what the new laws are that the president just signed, but I feel like they will have at some point some sort of like boundary, like 100-foot boundary where you're invading someone's privacy. It's no different if somebody across the street had a telephoto lens camera and they're taking video or pictures from across the street. It's really no difference. You just have a vehicle up in the air now. But yeah, there's no laws that says that you can't do any of that.
I mean, that's, I guess part of me thinks that, man, if I buy one of these, I mean, my dad bought one of these. He bought one of the, like the nice ones, like a Phantom or something, right?
Right.
Because he wants to throw it up in the air and fly around his house and, just thinks it's cool. But if you put on like a restriction like that or something, where now you're not allowed to fly a drone in your own backyard because there's a fear that you're looking at other people's stuff. That's going to force people, I guess, to go out to community parks maybe, or I don't know, man, where's a safe place for someone to do it then, where do you draw the line?
Well, so, yeah, they actually have laws or rules that you can't fly in national parks. Some state parks you need you need authorization to fly there, like Green Lakes. You can't just go to Green Lakes and fly. You need to get the authorization, and you have to actually get something signed. But national parks is a big no-no. From what I know, there was a drone that flew into a geyser, and that was like the end of it.
So, you know, you mentioned people having like a, you know, a telephoto lens or something, you know, in their house. So what is the big difference then between a drone and a, you know, like a professional photography camera or lens?
There really is not a big difference. I can say that the cameras that they're making now with the newer drones are really like spectacular. Like the Mavic 2 Zoom, no, sorry, the Mavic 2 Pro, the one that I was talking about that has a Hasselblad camera on it. That's the same manufacturer camera that they use for the moon landing. Like, it's just, it has a crazy camera on it. And the footprint of these cameras are like small. They're like tiny. They're like as big as a quarter. So yeah, you just don't have to carry around cameras with big lenses. You can literally fly up in the air and just like zoom in and shoot at a very high resolution. But there really isn't a big difference.
So it's more of a, I'm getting the quality of one of those giant lenses with a small, you know, smaller portable camera.
Basically. Right. Right. And you're having fun flying it.
Yeah, that's true. So do people like for you, example, I know you said you've done some weddings in the past from one of our previous conversations. When you do like a wedding using a drone, for example, are you also able then, since it has the quality camera on it, are you also able to kind of hold the drone without the propellers rotating and still take great shots? Or
yes, you can. And a lot of people do that. Yep. You can walk around holding the drone like in your hand without the propellers in. And you can, you know, just move around. They actually make a handle, like a fixture that you can connect to the drone and hold it up in the air and just walk around.
So in New York, that's going to be called an assault camera.
Yep, exactly. And then they're going to start banning them.
Yeah. So you were talking about how you originally, you know, you had the 50-mile-per-hour drone, and then you wanted to go faster and got a 70-mile-per-hour drone. Is that the fastest that a drone can fly?
No, they have racing drones now that can go over 100 miles an hour.
I know. I didn't know if that's how fast the racing drones went. So,
well, the racing drones can fly. I should get into it. I don't have the time to get into it. I would love to, you know, to work with somebody who has the same motivation and drive to like start a business. I would love to help somebody out in the East Coast, because the racing drone, like that industry is wide open. I mean, it's so big in the West Coast that like if somebody just started a racing drone business and just got into it and made like a course, I think it would blow up. I really do.
Somebody listening going to start a drone racing business.
Yep. Yep. Call me.
So I think you mentioned before that you teach safety. So, I know there's been some talks about, like with you, when you mentioned Drone Academy and a couple of these other things, there's definitely schoolhouses opening up. I see a lot of stuff about, you know, hey, where can I study the FAA test? You know, we'll go to this school. Or where can I learn how to fly the drone? I'll go to this school. So you're talking about starting up a school here in Syracuse, New York. What kind of school are you looking at building here?
Right. So I definitely want to, teach safety. I want to get big on safety because I think that, you know, like we are representing drones in the city, and the more people that can fly safe That would benefit, you know, me as my company and the image of drones. I want to teach how to use the camera, because if you learn how to use the camera, if you learn, you know, like if it's too cloudy out, what shutter speed do I shoot at? What ISO should I be shooting at? What frames per second should I be shooting at? It really doesn't matter how much money you spent in a drone. You can buy a drone that's not very expensive and take very good, high quality video, if you know what you're doing. And I just want to teach that. You can what drone can they get? The DJI Spark. I think that's a $500 drone. And if you know how to use the camera, and with whatever your surroundings are, you can take some amazing footage. And I just want to teach that to people, and how to fly the drone. I mean, you have to learn how to fly the drone before you want to learn how to start using the camera. But I think there are some really simple techniques that I could show people with cones on flying, and always knowing, you know, the red lights is forward facing. The green lights means that's the back of the drone. So if they're flying and they don't really, they lose like the orientation, like the front and the back of the drone, I think I could really teach people the easy way on how to, you know, like how to maintain that orientation, or just not get confused and run into the side of a house. So I haven't opened up this school yet. It's a lot of work. I'm still working through all of the modules, but I definitely plan on opening up a school in Syracuse at the latest by summer. So I'm working hard. I need people. To come on board and help out. I'm just working to build a team now, and I think it'll be good. I know there's some schools out there, but it's something that I think would be fun for me, and I think it'll definitely benefit.
Well, I think it's an awesome idea. I mean, I do have one question on it, though. Are you planning on just, is this going to be a local place? Like, people are going to have to come to your school, like a local university, or is this something you're going to be able to push out online? Like, I'll be able to download your course, or is there, yep, it's going to be maybe both.
It's going to be both. When they come to the course or they sign up, they will be able to download a cheat sheet or like a worksheet. And then when they arrive, wherever it is, they will be given a drone workbook that basically has all the slides that I showed them. My vision is pretty easy, just to go to a hotel, because that's what I did when I went to one of these drone schools a long time ago. Give this presentation, show people the rules, how to start a business, teach them what they need to do to get their license, and how to use the camera and how to fly. Then after that, take everybody outside, sign a couple liability waivers in case they run into something, and do a little bit of hands-on training. I think that would be totally fun.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a great idea. You know, for the last 10 years, I've worked in a schoolhouse teaching people about UAVs.
Oh, yeah. So,
you know, maybe at some point we can work together on some curriculum or something. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. That would be awesome. No, that would totally be awesome.
Not trying to sell you on your episode here, but yeah, man, I think that's an awesome idea since you brought it up. I think that maybe in the future we can work on something together. So
cool. And it's a totally low cost. I mean, we're just renting out a room, and just the work is there, and you know, it's the business is there, and like the want and need to learn is there as well. So I would definitely love to work with you.
Thanks, dude. And I gotta be honest, man, the interest in this is insane right now. I mean, you know, I joined one of those UAV commercial UAV groups that I think you're in too. And just to see, 15 to 20,000 people in one group talking about all the stuff is incredible. And I know it's a lot bigger than that, but so that kind of brings me to where I wanted to transition, is if there's, 50,000 of you drone guys out there, do you think that the major corporations must have already picked up on this? Do you think that they're going to start trying to monopolize that? Do you think they're going to start trying to weed out all you small business guys and try to be like, hey, this is, I think Verizon's got that Skyward thing. I think you're going to start seeing, like, this is the State Farm drone company. This is the Verizon drone company, or the, are you going to start seeing them? Do you think they're going to try to absorb you people, or do you think that there's hope for the small guys?
I think there is hope, honestly. I know that there's big companies who are using drones, but I don't foresee them like taking over the small businesses. I mean, if they do, they're a bunch of assholes, but I don't see it happening. I know that National Grid, they are flying, they have people now, and they fly their drones that have a thermal camera to inspect the landlines. And but I don't see them advertising like a business of some sort where they can do this to other companies, like have this service. I haven't seen anything like that, but I'm pretty hopeful that if you have some small business in drones, like you can use that as a tool for so many things, and you'll come up with something totally new. For an example, I thought about using a drone to decorate trees for Christmas, like dangle a long, string of Christmas lights and just slowly going down in a circle. Cause it's something simple like that. And there will always be a need of some sort. So we definitely have a chance.
Well, I'm glad you're optimistic about that, because when you mention, like National Grid, for example, if they were to just say, well, you know what, I don't want to hire a drone guy that's going to charge me $100 an hour, so I'm going to put a job offer out there that's minimum wage, or let's say it's $20 an hour, and you come work for National Grid, we'll give you the company benefits, and you'll just be our drone guy, right? Mm-hmm. Now they're saving themselves $80 an hour for some basic employee to do that business away from other people. I think the risk there is if they all started doing that. Then where are you going to get your business from? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. 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 So, totally. Yeah. Now they have schools, or colleges. You can go to school and study drones and do things like what you're saying, go to National Grid and be their drone guy and pay them, $80 an hour. And they're still saving money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some risk there. I think as a collective community, you all need to figure out a way to, I wouldn't say unionize, but you need to find a way to keep the big corporations from getting their, getting their stiff arm out, if you will.
Yeah, that is definitely a really good thought. I've never even thought about that.
Playing devil's advocate there. If I was a business, I do. So, I wanted to talk to you about. You mentioned the schoolhouse, and I know we've already talked about how you do all kinds of commercial imagery. You can do pretty much anything out there with a drone that's asked of you. But I was really interested when you said you wanted to follow a car and you needed a drone that was going 50 miles an hour. Didn't you do some work on a movie where you had to follow vehicles or dogs, or what was it? I know that you did some work out there in California on a movie.
Yep. So it was at the Mojave Desert. It was for IMAX, and there were dirt bikes that were dangling a line with a ball at the end, and these racing dogs, I forget what kind of dogs they were. They weren't greyhounds or anything like that, but they were fast, and they had to basically chase the ball, and the job was to follow the dog and just keep them in frame while they were just running across the Mojave Desert. And that's literally, you know, it was like a 2-day job. But that was totally a great experience. That one was my first real productions experience that I had.
That's awesome. And how did you get picked for that? You're in New York.
Yep. I have friends and people that I know that are in California. And not only that, I'm a part of the school that I told you has grown so big. I believe there's 3,000 people in it now. So I know people from almost every state and internationally as well. And if there is something going on in California, like this IMAX movie, cause they need a drone guy, then opportunities like that will show up in that forum. And they're like, all right, who can be in Florida at this time and this date? We need a drone guy for this much money. And it's so easy to get something like that. You know, like that forum or that group that I'm in is mainly people who join who want to learn, but there is a number of people who have learned quickly and they just want to get into the film industry, and you know, things like that like help me like get those jobs.
So I mean, did you have to fly yourself out there? Did you pay for that? You said I could be in California, I could be in the desert and you know, next week I'll pay for my ticket. Like, mm-hmm. Is that how it went by? Or they're like, hey, Ed, we want you. We're going to pay you for you to come out here.
Yep. I actually paid for my own ticket. I actually paid for my own ticket. The actual opportunity, was given to, Chris, who actually runs that drone university. And I just became like really close friends with him. I started to repair drones and I was his drone repair guy. And he actually brought me on and I paid for my own ticket and I flew to California. And that's where I did the whole IMAX thing. I believe it was not long after that, they had something called the NAB. It's the National Association of Broadcasts. And that's when all of us, a number of us from that group met in Las Vegas. And that's where the NAB show was. But yeah, we just get together like all the time and we shoot. We just went to Utah and we shot a big car scene. There was race cars that were drifting around the airport, this abandoned airport. And there had to have been 10 plus drones like in the air just recording these cars drifting. But I could keep talking about all the opportunities that I've had, you know, just because I started this. I have traveled and I've met people. I've seen like amazing things that you typically can't see unless you're high up in the air, you know, things like that.
Yeah, I can only imagine. It sounds like you're extremely passionate about this. I totally get it. So when you know, you talked about 10 drones up in the air at the same time, how were you all able to deconflict from yourselves? Like, how were you able to make sure that they didn't, you know, was it altitude deconfliction? Was it laterally? How did you guys make sure you didn't crash into each other?
Right. So collectively, we agreed. All right, I'm going to stay at 100 feet and this group's going to stay at 200 feet. And we're going to alternate. So, you know, like there was a corner, like a drifting corner, and there was a group of us that shot that, like that scene or like that shot. And the other group of people shot it from up high from a different angle. And we kind of just rotated. We were pretty good about that. And of course, as the day went on, then it was just a free for all at the end. But we were just being as safe as possible, not flying directly over people. It was just like an understanding that we had, like, there's a drone there, you know, stay at a different altitude, at least 100 feet away. And if you're going to come in, you know, like, just yell out, you know, like coming in or anything like that, or flying overhead. Like when I take off, I usually say like going hot, so people know, you know, because those propellers could really chop you up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like what you guys did is kind of something that we do in the military. We have a ground control dial that basically throws up what's called a ROS, which is a restricted operating zone, where he only lets certain aircraft into that area. And then he deconflicts those aircraft based on, you know, altitude, you know, like you're at 100 feet, you're at 200 feet, 300 feet. And then, you know, kind of divvies it up like a pie almost, like you guys stay on this side of the pie, you guys stay on this side of the pie. So it kind of sounds like y'all were doing that, which is funny, because if you had somebody with military airspace experience there, they could easily coach a team of you to do something like that.
And I don't think any of us have military experience, and we probably could have used something like that, you know, some sort of instruction or somebody that has that experience, and not like rely on you know, on us, like just visually. If there's techniques that we could learn, that would definitely be something that could be useful.
Yeah, you could incorporate that into your schoolhouse and have and start teaching groups of drone people how to work together as a team.
Wow. Yeah,
using military techniques basically. So
yeah,
that'd be kind of cool. So you're doing a lot of this, you know, I wouldn't say Hollywood stuff, you know, but you're getting involved here with the movies and whatnot. I mean, maybe it is Hollywood. Can you say the name of the movie that you're working on?
Yep. Okay. So you just mentioned Hollywood. I got a phone call from Hollywood about a month and a half ago from Hollywood. And they said, hey, we're coming to Syracuse. We need a drone guy, and we heard that you are the drone guy. So I'm like, yeah, I am the drone guy. You know, so
yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, yep. So the name of the movie is called Sid is Dead, and I was at Onondaga Lake Parkway. They needed to shoot a scene going over the lake. It's probably going to be like the opening scene. I shot that, then I got called again to shoot in Liverpool, to shoot at what used to be called the Zog. They actually bought that school out. It's now a production house. So I followed the main character on his bike, you know, like riding like through the streets, and that was like a drone scene too.
That's cool, man.
Yep.
You start building up this, you know, this film kind of resume. It's going to be pretty big at some point. You're going to not be in New York. You're going to be in Los Angeles.
No. Yeah. It's, I was totally surprised that the film industry came to Syracuse. I was totally surprised.
That's cool though. So, you know, I'm not sure if they have, if you're going to, Is there recognition for that kind of stuff? Like, is there cinematography awards that you might get for doing this?
So I have gotten some awards. So 2 years ago, no, I'm sorry, last year, not 2017, but 20, I'm sorry, it's 2019, right? Yeah, 2017. 2017 was when the New York State Fair, they started something called the Drone Film Festival. And I applied for it and I submitted a video. And that year I got silver that year. And I said, the next year I'm going to get gold. And just last year, 2018, I submitted a video and I got gold and bronze. So now I have gold, silver, and bronze for the right. last 2 years. It's definitely a really big accomplishment because they had people submit not just from the U.S. from internationally, like Finland. I saw videos. I saw videos of this bag. It was an awesome video of this bag flying, and it was like flying like over these huge cliffs. I don't know what country this video was from, but there was some super amazing videos that was submitted, and I was like excited and happy that I was like selected to like win these awards.
Well, I'm going to have to watch the videos that won for you then if you're beating out international competition.
Yeah.
Is that on your Facebook page? Is that?
Yep. So it is. If you search on Google or even go on the New York State Fair website, they have a section there where you can look at the videos. So this last time that I got gold and silver was two videos. One video was I was flying for the Special Olympics, and the police officers from U.S. and Canada ran like a 5K, and then they met in the middle of the Niagara Falls bridge, and I did a little video on that. That one got bronze, and then the video that I was just talking about in Utah where the car is drifting, that one got gold.
Nice.
That one's on there. And last year, the video I'm getting, see, it's 2019. I'm getting confused with these years. So 2 years ago, I submitted a video, and that one was, that video was from the Syracuse half marathon, and that one got silver. Okay. Yep.
And are these on your Facebook page, your High Point Aerial Facebook page?
Yep. They all are on there. Yeah. If you go on Facebook, it's just High Point Aerial.
Yeah. And is it on your website as well? The High Point Aerial website?
Yep. Yep. They are also, they're also on my website.
That's just highpointaerial.com, right?
Right.
I'm going to take a look. I'm going to bring it up to my PC here so I can watch it when we're done. Cause I wanted to watch that. So don't respond to my chat bot.
Yep. A visitor from Cicero, New York, is now on High Point Aerial.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, don't do that. A lot of people are flying during the daytime, and all the videos are daytime. But I'm really, really curious. I have yet to see a nighttime, commercial drone video. Do you guys fly in FLIR, use an IR, thermal, what night vision? I mean, what's that look like?
Yep. So
I know you're one of the only people that has that night.
So flying at night is totally a different experience. Not only do you have to worry about maintaining line of sight of a really small drone that's in the dark air, but you need to have special equipment to actually have the certification. It's called the COA. It's the certification of waiver. I believe you are very well aware of that. And this nighttime waiver, I applied for it, and I followed, the rules, and we got it. We have to put this lighting on the drone that can be seen by it's 3 nautical miles. Or it's like 3 miles away. So I mounted these LEDs, these bright LEDs. So we have infrared cameras as well. If there's a missing pet or a missing person, you can easily find them. But it's totally a different experience. You can't really take good video at night. I mean, yeah, you could take video of a really bright skyline, but nighttime operations is at least for me, it's used for things like finding missing people, or you know, like if you would like to take a picture, just a still photo of like the Syracuse like skyline and things like that. Yeah.
So yeah, so I was curious. I mean, I'd be interested to see, you know, to see a video, you know, an IR or FLIR or something like that, or you know, throw something up there on the web page. Let me take a look at that.
That'd yeah, cool. Yeah, I typically don't fly a lot at night. There hasn't been really a need much, but I know that I have been communicating with the amphitheater, and I have seen many hobbyists fly near the amphitheater or even directly over the people, which is a big, big, big no-no, and someone can really get hurt. And I'd like to be like their drone guy when all these big time acts come and they want photos or videos or anything like that.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. You know, concerts and stuff, you could then provide that to the band or the, you know, the musicians or whatever, and let them push that out. You know, that'd be cool.
Right.
So, High Point Aerial, what's the best way for people to contact you if they need drone help? What do you guys prefer?
Right. Well, there are two easy ways. There's two methods. There's a contact form on our website, and it's a pretty easy form where you can go through and click like what kind of job are you looking for, how many hours are you thinking, and then my phone number is also like listed there. Because of this industry is so unique, we do have some solid price points, but a majority of the jobs are so unique that they're not the same as the job, like, you know, the job that you just had before. Somebody wants like a Verizon, they wanted me to fly up 100 feet up in the air just to see if their proposed monopole would clear trees. And it was literally a 15-minute job. I got paid over $1,000, and it's just hard to price things like that. But people can definitely call, like, if you have a job and you want, you know, like a video at a wedding, you could definitely go on my website, fill out the contact form, call me, and we could work something out.
Okay. So it's the business to business part that's really hard to price. But
right.
But once, you know, for business to consumer, you know, when you start saying, all right, this is how much it costs me to do weddings, this is how much it costs me to do, you know, videos of your houses and stuff like that, you'll be able to price that pretty standard across the board.
Right.
For business to consumer, it's gonna be the business to business stuff that's difficult, huh?
Right. As time goes on and you do, and we do more and more jobs, then I'll start to, you know, get a feel of what the average is, and I could, it'll like help me.
Yeah, kind of standardize it. That's good.
Right.
So, man, Ed, it's always good talking to you, man. It's the second time we've had a nice long conversation like this, and I always enjoy talking to you. I wanted to thank you for being on the show today, and just, you know, taking time out of your weekend to do this. It was really, really awesome.
Absolutely. And you could talk to me anytime. I love talking about this kind of stuff.
I know you do. That's why I want to do the show, because I know we can easily do another episode in the future.
So, right.
Well, for everybody out there, this is High Point Aerial, Ed Gonzalez, his company, and they are the Central New York drone team. So if you need drone work, you guys hit up High Point Aerial .com or the Facebook page, High Point Aerial as well. So Ed, thank you so much, man. And
awesome.
You know, I'm sure we'll be chatting soon, dude.
Great. Thank you for having me, Chris.
All right. Hey, thanks, man. Have a good night.
Yep. Good night.
See ya.
Everybody, I want to thank you for listening to our podcast this evening with Ed Gonzalez from High Point Aerial. You can find him at highpointaerial.com, and his Facebook page is High Point Aerial as well. And he is the leading drone guy in Central New York. So once again, thanks everyone for listening. Please like and share this and push it out, especially if you're a commercial pilot. I think there's a lot of information in this podcast that people can benefit from that are getting into the commercial scene, that are just now getting their FAA Part 107 license and looking to start their own business. So thank you, everybody. This is Chris Kelso with Unmanned signing out. Cheers.